All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 4 in this junior and senior high class of Ancient History with History at Our House. We're continuing with our orientation to the study of ancient history. We're going to have a discussion today about the value of ancient history and some of the challenges that we encounter necessarily when we want to study the past, and in particular the ancient past, based on the fact that we are living in this advanced modern civilization around the year 2015 here, 2016 later on. And so we have some particular challenges when it comes to achieving a proper awareness of the past. And so what we talked about last time, I'm just going to go ahead and share with you to recapture that context here, is that when we study the past at all, we have to do it in a certain way in order to achieve knowledge that is of any relevance, of any significance, of any practical value or use here and now. And we have to, in particular, get over avoid the trap. That's another way of putting it. Avoid the trap of thinking of the study of the past as pertaining only to the past. And we have to very deliberately say to ourselves that, and set ourselves as a goal, not merely to understand the past, but rather to understand the world we live in. Okay, this is our real objective, and that studying the past is a way to do that. It's a way of thinking about where we are, in particular, by looking at the events, the people and the events that shaped the world that we live in, and looking at the people of history and the events that occurred, which illustrate universal truths concerning human life. Things that are true no matter who you are and where you are and when. No matter what language you speak, no matter what gender you are, no matter what place you live, they're still true. And that's one of the most, ultimately the most valuable thing that history can do for us, is demonstrate such truths. And if we can learn on the basis of the many thousands of years of experience that human beings have, of trying some things they fail, trying other things they succeed, then we can accumulate that wisdom and do better. And people have at different times in the past done this. The greatest example of people being able to do that were the founding fathers of the United States, who used ancient history and were able to create the greatest country in the world with that as one of their most important tools. So we want the same thing. We want to approach history the same way the founding fathers did. We need to acknowledge and embrace the fact that we are here and now, and that this is absolutely the most important fact in the study of history. Nothing else matters. Now, if we don't grasp that, if we don't embrace that, and if we don't incorporate that into all of our learning, we're doing it wrong. We will end up with a body of useless information. We'll end up with trivia. We'll end up with the kind of stuff that, well, most historians have a whole bunch of useless knowledge. And the only place that they can show it off is in college campuses and in books that nobody reads. And meanwhile, everybody else is getting busy living. And there's something terribly, terribly unhealthy about that whole situation, right? This world that we have, in which there's this potentially fantastic body of knowledge, and it's completely going to waste. And the reason why is because the people who are in charge of it right now have fallen into the trap of thinking that history is about the past. And they want everybody to pay attention to the past at the expense of the present. And that's why, you know, I have no problem or no issue with most people basically ignoring history. Because if history is about the past, which historians have told us that it is, then there's no point in studying it. However, if history is about things that still matter, if history is about universal truths, or if history is about understanding how the world around us came to be, oh, well, then that is something worth looking at. Okay, well, understanding the world is a powerful, motivating thing that we can do as human beings. That anxiety that most people feel about the world because they don't understand it, that can be gone. There can be it can be replaced with a very empowering feeling of saying, I get this. I know why that's going on in Iraq. Or I know what's going on in Ukraine and why it matters and so on. And I get this, why this problem right now in Greece is something very interesting, and we should, even people in America should pay attention to it. And I know what's happening in China, and I get that it's actually very, very important, and so on. So the world becomes basically this accessible, understandable place if you can fit it into a framework of historical awareness. And it's really great when you can do that. So we'll try to do as much as we can now in this year of ancient history to give you a stronger framework than you have now. Some of you have a framework already. Some of you have learned American history. You're already building up that framework. You're understanding how America came to be where it is today. There are a lot of things that are going on today that need to be closely paid attention to that are going to deeply, deeply affect your life. Such as whether the government's going to completely take over healthcare and you won't be able to get any unless you go to a government official to get it, and stuff like that, or education, whether or not you're going to have to go into a public school or whether or not you'll still have the freedom to be homeschooled and so on. These are issues that deeply affect our lives currently and will continue to affect it deeply, our lives deeply. And we want to understand, how did we get to this situation, both for better and for worse, and see if we can't figure out how to navigate our way to a better way of life than we currently have and not make mistakes and end up in a worse place. So that's what we're about here. This is ultimately why we want to do this. Bettering human life here and now. We want something that's relevant to that. If we aren't acquiring knowledge that is useful, knowledge that is powerful, then we're wasting our time. And because we could be spending our time on something else that would be useful. So that literally is a waste of time. Spending your time on things that could be better spent doing something else. We don't want that. We want to spend every minute that's spent studying history should be a minute that's spent studying history that's more valuable than any other activity we could be doing right now. And that I very sincerely believe is the case. Okay, I'm going to give you a second to digest that and I'll be right back. All right, sorry, I just had to take care of an interruption there. Okay, so we're gonna, the method here, this premise that we want knowledge that matters, and we want to approach history in a way that gives us that. I call that present centrism. It is my own term. I've never heard of it said anywhere else, So I'm trademarking it. And so that's why I use that little TM there. Because in the future, when people are talking about history and they are referring to present-centric history, I expect to get some credit for it. And just like, remember a little while back we were studying, in our philosophy segment, we were studying love languages, and that's a registered trademark as well of a character who developed that, really brilliant, psychologist. So his, you know, we have to give him credit whenever we do that. So in the future, if people are talking about present centrism, they're going to have to say, you know, who it is that first thought of that, and has given it that name. Yeah, this is the approach. This is my approach. That's what I name it. That's what I call it. And today, you know, we're going to get more into this approach, what it's like and why we do it that way. And so I'm going to go ahead and show you kind of our starting point here in history. And I want to make sure I bring up the right documents. So let me see. What would I do? Okay, I'm going to go to this. There we go. Okay, so this is the beginning of a construct that we are going to use, of a tool that we are going to make use of this year in order to maintain a good perspective, a proper perspective in studying the ancient past. Some of you who are veterans are familiar with this. You've seen it in American history before, but I want to focus with this group on more aspects of it, more of the reason why it is the way that it is, so that you can gain some insight into what it is you're being exposed to and think about it more deeply, because it deserves some of that investment. It's not automatic that history should be taught this way. And if we're going to do a good job and we're going to be really successful this year, we should spend some time thinking about why and how it is that we did it, and take it very, very seriously, because it is very rare. Okay? I don't see any equivalent anywhere. So, this is the beginning of what I call an anchor fact timeline. And you see it labeled there at the top, civilizations and anchor facts of ancient history. Right. And the center is a timeline, which at this point, I think everybody knows how to read one of those. So we're not going to belabor the point of how to read a timeline. If you don't know how, you better get busy, asking, or, you know, asking your parents or whatever. Right. But it's a timeline. We have the dates marked on it: BC, before Christ, AD, Anno Domini, the standard ways of writing, the dates, of events that occurred in history. And you can see that the timeline extends back from where we are, right, 2015-16, this year, all the way back to 3000 BC. And this is going to be an essential aspect of our method for maintaining contact with the world around us when we leap back into the past, of not letting go of sight of where we are and bringing us back to where we are. And I have kind of a metaphor that I'd like to share with you concerning kind of how this method works. And then we'll discuss it literally here. Okay? But first I think the metaphor is kind of fun. And so I want to see what you guys make of the metaphor here. So what is it that, why is this our number one priority in studying ancient history? I mean, literally, this is our number one priority. If we don't establish this, if we don't embrace this, if we don't incorporate this in our every procedure, we're making a mistake. So why is that? Why is this the most important thing? Well, I'm going to demonstrate metaphorically why that is. Alexander, you probably want to take it on theoretically here, but hold off for just a second. I do want to come back to the theory of it, but I want to demonstrate the point that I'm going to make in a kind of comparative way or metaphorically. And I think this is kind of a fun procedure here. So let me go ahead and bring up a different item here to demonstrate my point. So We're going to use this to demonstrate the metaphor. Does anybody know what we're looking at? I know right now you're thinking, how's this going to help? This is just confusing me. It's not helping me to understand. Anybody know what this is? Nemo, what is it?
A map.
Okay, a map of what? Oops, sorry. I didn't unmute you. Go ahead. Do you know what it is?
Rum lines?
Well, yes, there are those such lines, but I literally mean a map of what? Does anybody know? I'll show you guys. All right, I'm going to bring the annotation tools up here. Okay. And I'm going to use this tool to kind of draw on it. So watch this as I start to draw. You'll see what it is right away. Okay. Follow along this set of funny symbols. Now, do you guys know what it is? Now everybody knows, right? Juliet, what is it?
It's Europe.
Okay, and specifically, what is this that I just drew the outlines of?
That's Africa, Greece.
Yeah, in the middle, what is it?
Oh, it's Mediterranean.
The Mediterranean Sea, right? Okay, very good. All right, now I'm going to take away the yellow lines, and you will still see, right? You will still be able to see what is on there. All right, so take them away. You'll still see them because they're marked by these, right, these labels. If we zoom in here for a second on this, just a second while I change tools. If we zoom in on this spot here, does anybody know what this says? If you can read it on your screen, Timothy?
I think that says Rome.
Roma, yes, exactly, with a kind of flourishing R and stuff like that. So if we zoom back out to the full extent, there is that little wording, right? That's Rome, right? There's Italy, the boot. So now you can kind of sense what this thing is, okay? And then, all right, so that's what all these scribbles are, right? Are different locations along the coasts of the various places in the Mediterranean, right? Why are there all these funky straight lines all over this map? What are those? What are those? I think Nemo had some idea. What did you call those, Nemo?
Rum lines.
Which means what? Explain what that is.
You have to tell the distance that you're going.
Okay, fair enough. Why are certain lines drawn here? What do they represent? And not other lines. Like for instance, let me go ahead and highlight.
One place to another.
True enough, but look, this line is like that. This line is like that. What are those lines? Obviously going straight up and down, what are they? Timothy?
I would say they're the time zones, but I don't think that exists back then, so they might be longitude and latitude.
Yeah, they're lines of longitude, right? In other words, they're compass lines, right? So that would be the north pointing north, right? And then these lines here that go across them are lines that are exactly east-west, right? And then you have variations on that, depending on what angle you're looking at. This line is equivalent to 45 degrees, right? Running from northwest to southeast. Okay. So if you were in, let's say, Rome, right? Because there's Rome. And you want to get to Alexandria. right? You got to sail there, right? If you want to navigate there, well, of what use is this chart? Okay, right? So I'm going to take away my extra lines here. And what is my point here, the point of my metaphor, if you can glean my meaning? Abby, what's my meaning here?
It can kind of, like, what I'm thinking is this chart, it can kind of help you show a line that you can follow to go there.
Okay, you're on the right track, right? This type of chart would be used for navigational purposes, right? So what you would do is you would say, okay, I'm where I am. Maybe now you're getting the metaphor. And you would say, all right, so I'm going to sail at one distance for a certain amount of time, which will get me a certain distance. And then I will sail in this direction for a certain amount of time. And then I will get to the coast, right? And then after that, I will sail along the coast because I'm comfortable sailing along the coast. But I'm going to sail in the open sea here in as quick and as efficient a manner as I can, because I know that I have charts and I have the map. And if I go on a certain azimuth or direction, it's called, for a certain amount of time, I will have covered a certain amount of distance at a certain speed. And then I shift directions and I go in another direction for a certain amount of time, I know that I'll get here. And these are the uses of the charts, right? Okay. Alexander, you want to say something about that?
I was just wondering, do you know how big this map is in real life? Because that looks like a lot of tiny writing. And for you to be able to read that writing comfortably...
Yeah, sure enough. It would probably have to be about like 5 feet across rather than the way that we're looking at it in order for it to be useful. And then you would pair this up with a book that contains a bunch of tables in it that says at certain speeds, certain distances, and certain so on and so on. So all of this was kept very secret because you wanted to know how to navigate, but you didn't want your competitors to know how to navigate. And so these charts were state secrets. They were extremely valuable. And of course, you would take this, principle and you would apply it then also to global navigation eventually once you were able to do that. And that was huge, right? Because if you knew what direction to go in and what winds to take advantage of and so on, right? You could sail potentially faster to the same place. You could get there 2 weeks earlier than your competitors or what have you. And this was, you know, the difference between success and failure in trade and so on. All right. But my point is this. What is the point of this metaphor? Right? So let's imagine you are in Rome, right? How do you use a port-a-land chart? How can you get where you want to be? You absolutely have to start. There's no way to work with a chart like this unless you are somewhere, right? Unless you know where you are. The chart like this is useless if you don't know where you are. And then, so you start there and say, you are here. And then, okay, now that I know where I am, I can take this chart and I can take my tables and I can plot a course anywhere. And then when I get there, how do I get back home? Oh, once again, I start from where I am. And then I use the chart and the tables combined, and I'm able to navigate my way home. So if you're going to successfully, you know, be a successful merchant in the Renaissance, in the world of Renaissance Europe, for instance, here using a port-a-land chart, you've got to know where you are in order to get where you want to go. And once you get there, you got to be able to figure out where that is and get and figure out how to get back to where you were in the first place. Otherwise, you can't get to the stuff you want to buy. And otherwise, you can't get back to the place you were in order to sell it. So this is life here, right? If you don't know where you are, you can't possibly succeed at getting anywhere else. And once you get there, how are you going to get back? Okay, so that's my metaphor for history also, right? Which is, of course, a somewhat different proposition. So when you use metaphors, you can only stretch them so far here. But I think that it's completely valid to make a comparison between this type of activity and history in the sense that you are engaging in some kind of learning about the world. You're acquiring knowledge of facts. Okay, who cares? Why bother? Why bother go on that expedition? Why go? And if you are going to go, where are you going to go? Well, you can't possibly know. What are you going to learn? And why would you learn it? You can't possibly generate a sensible answer to that question unless you first know where you are. That determines everything. That determines everything. So now let's apply that literally to the issue of history. Let's apply that literally to the issue of history and this notion of charting our awareness of the past here. And I'm going to just kind of get you to, you know, challenge your understanding of this topic here by in the following manner here. I want somebody here to try to articulate how being in America, as opposed to anywhere else, matters a great deal with regard to the study of ancient history. We here could perhaps formulate an explanation for everybody else. Why does it matter so much that we're studying ancient history from America rather than somewhere else? Alexander?
Well, America wasn't the first government to have democracy or republic. That was ancient Greece and Rome. And
okay,
so, wait.
You are correct. However, you're assuming a lot of context of knowledge that not everybody here has. I want an answer that you could give to anybody, that you could give to people that don't know any history. Okay, so don't draw upon your knowledge of ancient democracy to give me your answer. Just what would be an accessible answer to why does it matter so much that we're in America compared to somebody somewhere else? Okay, let's understand it on a more basic level than that. Your answer is good, but it's also very valuable to understand it on a more basic level than that. Keen?
Well, if I bring, you said, you know, literally, we're going to draw the parallel between the anchor fact timeline and the map or the chart that you were showing us.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do that. Let's say, you know, why would it matter that I'm in Rome trying to go to Alexandria? If you say it that way, it makes, you know, you can see it right away. You need to, you know, where you are matters. And, it, you know, that's the way it is with history. I don't want to say anything else because then I'd be relying on, like...
Okay, but I think you can say more, and you're on the right track, and I'm going to be the one to say it then. All right, I want everybody to see my point here by imagining being in the poorest country in the world. Not the greatest country in the world, okay, but the poorest country in the world. So you go and you Google poorest country in the world, and you get this ranking, and supposedly Malawi is the poorest country in the world, and that means per capita people make $200 a year in Malawi. So if you are a child of history at our house age, okay, living in Malawi, would you study ancient history? Abby?
No.
Why not?
Well, probably because nobody has enough money to pay for you to study ancient history.
Okay, that's getting in the right direction, okay? But let's say imagine that there was a U.S. aid organization for history at our house that gave scholarships. Would you study ancient history if you were in Malawi still? Even if you had the scholarship and an internet connection?
I don't know why, but I feel like probably not.
No, there's definitely the answer would be no. I mean, try to, you know, put these children in front of the computer and the internet. Should they be studying ancient history right now? Why not? Well, because they don't have any food or water. What kind of perverse, you know, human adult giving guidance to these children would say, all right, settle down. Everybody sit down and pay attention. I'm going to teach you stuff that happened 5,000 years ago. That would be insane. What do I have to... If I went there and I wanted to teach these kids something, what would I have to be able to teach them? Wow, I'm shocked that this doesn't seem to click with any of you guys. Or Juliet?
How to get food with water.
Yeah, right, exactly. How to drill a well, how to get access to clean filtered water, how to grow crops, how to irrigate crops. I mean, I'm not an expert on any of those things, so not much that I could do to help these people, but if I knew that would be something I was doing in my life, then that would be the knowledge that I would acquire to go there in order to try to do the most good, right? Okay, but see my point here. Please, don't lose track of the point here, right? Where you are, it makes a huge difference as to whether or not you would study ancient history right now in the world. We're all living on the same blue marble, but our circumstances are very different. So if you're living in many parts of the world, quite frankly, ancient history, it would be perverse for you to learn it. It would be a gigantic waste of time. You have got so many other things that are way more important for you to learn. So now that creates that sets up a really interesting thought. So I contend that it is worth it for you guys to learn it. Does that kind of pique your curiosity a little bit? Why is it that it's worth it for you guys to learn it? Whereas for other people, no, it would make no sense. Alexander's answer is part of the way there, right? Abby, some other thoughts about it?
Well, we would need to, because we have the ability to get food and water, we have money, we have everything we need to live, and so we have time, and studying ancient history is of a great value to us because we're not having to fight every day for what we get, so that we can live.
Yes, fantastic, fantastic. That's exactly right. Okay, so having already secured these other fundamental values, we have the time that we can devote to the pursuit of other values to improve our quality of life. And history is one of those that can do it. Now that we've got those other things taken care of, all right, now we've got optional values that we can pursue that improve our lives. And learning about the past is one of those that makes sense for us now in our context to pursue. So I'm going to use that word. I'll probably return to that word quite a bit. Context matters. Okay, in order to engage in any activity, any pursuit of knowledge, if you want to learn anything, your context is what determines what you should learn, what you can learn, really, what you can learn, and then what you should learn. All right, so think about, for instance, you're learning math. Everybody's here at some level of math. Your context of knowledge in math determines what you can and should learn next. Right? So if you have mastered arithmetic, then you are ready for algebra. You're ready for the idea of substituting specific numbers with symbols that represent numbers to represent certain logical relations, quantitative relations. But if you don't know how to do 2 + 2, then there's no way you're ready to learn A plus A, right? So you don't have the context for learning that. Okay, so our context is different from these poor people. And of course, our priorities shift in relation to our context. So you are here makes all the difference. In one context, ours, ancient history is a worthy pursuit and we should do it. And unfortunately for them, in their context, it makes no sense whatsoever. So that's as dramatic as it gets, right? It's binary at that point. For some of us, ancient history matters. For others, matters not one bit. Okay, so that's my point here. Literally, our context determines our need to know. Likewise, this one is kind of a little bit humorous. I was thinking about, we could think about being in different places nowadays and what we need to know changes depending on where we are. Well, imagine being in America, but again, stay in the same place, but imagine being in a different time. So I laughingly said, well, what about Mr. Powell being in the same place 1,000 years ago with his family? So this is kind of what that would look like. Right, so here's Mr. Powell, and here's my son Patrick Henry, and here's my wife, and we are, of course, engaged in typical Stone Age behavior 1,000 years ago in America. Right, so we're in the same place, but we're in a different time, and wow, do our needs change? Right, I mean, our need, the Powell family's need for history at that point is zero. Absolutely zero. We are working on making stone arrow tips. And we are working on securing our survival in the barest fashion possible, right? So it's a totally different existence. Context is absolutely, it's not just, remember how we used the word formative last time? What you're learning in school is formative of your character and of your knowledge and of who you are, who you're going to be as a fully formed adult. Well, context is more than just formative. It's absolutely, it's a dominant factor in shaping what you can and should learn. So when we go back to this timeline, I mean, this now should be a more kind of dramatic notion in your thinking about the past. You have to realize that there's only one reason for you to learn it. There's only one, and how you learn it is absolutely completely determined by where you are. If you weren't here, if you weren't now, you'd learn it completely differently. My other favorite example is, imagine living in 10,000 years from now. Whatever that looks like. Hopefully, if we manage not to mess it up too badly, 10,000 years from now is some kind of galactic human civilization, right? Where we're living on dozens of planets all over the galaxy. We travel between the stars. Who cares about ancient Egypt at that point, right? Who cares about even necessarily, well, now it gets into a more interesting question. What about ancient Greece and ancient Rome? Do we care about them still then? That gets us to our next point, which is, I want you to look at the timeline. And I want you to think of the timeline from, you know, present centrically. The timeline that we're going to use this year is not a standard timeline. I don't think I've ever seen anybody else build a timeline like this. You have to think of history present-centrically in order to build a timeline like this. What do you notice about it? What's a little bit strange about it? Which is unusual. You wouldn't see it like this anywhere else. Keen, go ahead.
Our dates go into the present day.
Okay, that's one thing. But there's more. Think of it in comparison to your average sort of ruler. Alexander?
The scale of time changes. Like, the first half of the timeline is 4,000 years, from 3,000 BC to 1,000 AD. And then the second half of the timeline is only 1,000 years. And even more so, the first third of that is 500. Then the second third is 400.
Perfect.
And the third third is only 100 years.
Perfect. Exactly. So notice the scale is changing. Okay? So Alexander's clued in on this. Why is it changing? Why would it? Why does it make sense? Again, think present centrism. Why does it make sense to have a historical timeline that changes scale, that does not represent time equally? Who might be able to answer that question? Juliet.
Because the closer we get to the time that we live in, the more stuff is important to us now. So.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. All things remaining equal, the nearer things are to us, the more important that they are. Is that true? All things remaining equal, all other things remaining equal, the nearer an event is to us, the more important that it is. Is that true? Abby?
Not necessarily.
Well, okay, be careful, because my formulation is very, very specific, so I slipped it past you. Notice what I said. All other things remaining equal. There's a Latin phrase called ceteris paribus. All other things remaining equal. If we vary only the timing of the event, the closer it is to us, the more important that it is. So, in other words, let's take two equal things. The breakfast that you ate. At this time, what is the most important breakfast that you ate? And why? Alexander?
The one I just ate, because it's the one that's going to, like, the content of my breakfast decides, it's what's currently in my body and what's currently providing me energy to go throughout the day. So I had, like, I don't know, chips for breakfast, that would be less healthy, and I might feel more tired than if I had something healthy for breakfast.
Okay, absolutely. Now, by comparison, the breakfast that you had 6 years ago, right? Because it was 6 years ago, it might have been chips that day too, or, you know, right? Or something good or something bad. But how important is that now? Right? So if we're keeping the same thing, we're talking about breakfasts. Well, the most recent one is obviously the most important one. And the one that you had yesterday is going to be the second most important. And so on and so forth, all the way trailing back, right? Okay, but the reason why Abby said, and that's the case for pretty much anything that you can think of, right? The amount of sleep you had last night is the most important sleep that you can factor in to the quality of life that you're going to have today. And the amount of sleep you had the night before is the second most important. And then after that, it trails off, right? So that's the part that I said, if you pay attention to the thing that I said, that phrase that I said, all other things being equal. Right? So if we're talking about equal things, then the closer they are to us, the more that they matter. Closer in time and space, but we're talking about time here. The more recently they happened, the more important that they are. Okay, but Abby was trying to make the point that, well, the more recent something is doesn't necessarily mean how important it is. So, in other words, the quality of the event, the thing, there's another factor that determines whether or not something is important enough to study. Right? It's the nature of the thing that matters as well. Right? So, you know, your breakfast that you had this morning matters a great deal to how well that you're going to perform. On the other hand, you were born however many, you know, 8,000 days ago, and that is a long time ago, but you know what? That is the most fundamental fact about you. And there's nothing else that's more determinant of the fact that you are here today than the fact that you came into the world at all. Right? So that's the overarching point, that you are here because of that. So that's further back than your breakfast, and it's more important than your breakfast. You wouldn't even be here if you hadn't been born. So, and so we can think of history in the same way, that we're going to go to the ancient past. Now, if everything that human beings do is equal, if each type of action that they engage in is of equal worth or significance, then the further back we go, the less it matters, because the less connected it's going to be to who we are and the life around us. But what we're going to learn immediately, starting first thing tomorrow, is the relative importance of the things that human beings do is not constant. Human beings do some things that matter a great deal and other things that don't matter at all. And so, as it turns out, a lot of the things, not all of them, but a fair number of the things that human beings did in ancient times are among the most important things we could possibly learn. We can't find them anywhere else, and there's a really good reason why we need to study it right when it was first done. So that's what we'll start with tomorrow, is it is where this ancient past, even though it's further from us than anything else that we can see at all, is still very significant, still very closely connected to who we are, has a very important impact on how we live our lives. Crucial insight it provides us into the world that we live in, and instruction that in some cases we cannot find as usefully anywhere else. So it matters a great deal. All right, so that's what we're going to do, is we're going to get into the concretes now of this, and the, you know, how to mine the past for the present-centric information. And so we'll start with what I call anchor facts, and I'll show you how to maintain that connection between the past and the present, so you don't end up wasting your time learning a whole bunch of stuff about ancient things that really, frankly, don't matter one bit. And there's plenty of that. We don't want any of it. All right, that'll do for today. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.